Liverpool returned to the Cottage for our fourth and final meeting of the season, thank goodness, and left with all 3 points after an insipid second half from the mighty Whites. Liverpool support, well, the Scousers made themselves known throughout the game, and, you know, some of them were even in the away end, which was nice of them. But with our season ending on a bit of a whimper, and Palace, the Bone Family grudge match coming up on Saturday, I'm joined by Dylan, J-Mac, and a debutant in the case of J-Mac Jr., if you listen carefully, to dissect, digest, and determine what the hell is going on at the moment with Fulham. I'm Boney, and this is your Fulham Focus Podcast.
Fulham.
Gents and little gents, welcome, Dylan. It's good to see you again. It's been a while since we've done this one together. You were there. I was putting up with Gary Neville on Sky Sports, so I didn't have the full flavor of the game. I said, how was it? How are you? How are you feeling after all that?
Yeah, no, personally, I'm good. I think the game was very excited before because I feel like at home this season we have looked really dangerous, and I know how good we can be at home, you know, in contrast to the away performances. Although maybe given recent weeks, that sort of flipped on its head a little bit. But yeah, it was a bit flat, really, to be honest, from the start. It just never really looked like we sort of got going. And when you're playing top sides like Liverpool, you know, you've got to make every chance count. You know, they took the lead, obviously, through a great goal. And we managed to equalise on the stroke of half time. But yeah, it just never really seemed like it was going to be our day. And that's how it turned out. I think, yeah, just quite sloppy on in a few ways. And yeah, like I said, against the top sides, they're going to make you pay for individual errors.
Yeah, and it was just one of those things that we're going to go into this depth. For 45 minutes, it was like, oh, okay, maybe we've got something on. J-Mac, as a father, how did you see Sunday?
Can you just be a bit quieter, mate? The baby's attached to me right now. I look like Zach Galifianakis, whatever his name is from The Hangover. Did they just want it more maybe than us? Is that it? I mean, I felt like the first half we were quite good for our money, even though I felt we were maybe at times like under the cosh a little bit. But I mean, we seemed in it, and just the second half we just sort of kind of fell to pieces a little bit. But I mean, it all went, you just see Tom Kenny and Wilson being subbed on, and then they bring on Darwin Nunez. Who else, the other ones? I've just gone.
Mo Salah.
Mo Salah. And the other one was?
Harvey Elliott.
They took him off because I was shouting abuse at him all game.
Yeah, that's right. It was just a complete, you know, they've got a better squad than us. And like, I'm not surprised they beat us. Everyone said that they were there for the taking. I'm really not too sure. They have such motivation. I think one of the celebrations we can make out of this is that Harvey Elliott didn't score against us again, which is good. But yeah, I'm not as dissatisfied as everyone else. I mean, a loss is a shame, but I feel like this is a team that are fighting for the Jurgen Klopp swan song, and you know, they got it.
It just would have been nice to completely put the kibosh on Klopp leaving with any silverware. But yeah, never mind. Let's get into this a bit. So the game ended 3-1. It topsy turvy. First half not terrible. I'm gonna say it. I don't care who you would have had in that wall. That was a worldie. Alexander Arnold was going to score that. It was a stunning, stunning free kick. I sort of shouted myself a bit hoarse at Gary Neville going on about putting taller people in that wall. That ball was so far over the wall and then dipped, sort of Roberto Carlos-esque, that, you know, it was, you know, credit where it's due. That was a stunning, stunning free kick. So, but that was really, you know, they had the other free kick a little bit earlier that Harvey Elliott did terribly, terribly well with. But that was, from my memory, and going back through most of the reports before getting ready for this, there wasn't really much else from them in the first that was telling it. We were holding our own.
There was, I think Diaz had a header quite early on, but that came to nothing. And then, yeah, it was just a free kick. And, yeah, basically just going to agree with you, I think. I don't think anyone would have stopped that. I don't think it matters what defenders are in the wall, which keeper's in the goal. I think, yeah, probably 90 times out of 100 that that ends up in the back of the net. It was a great strike. So yeah, credit where credit's due. Good goal. And if you're going to go behind to a top team, might as well be through a great goal.
We needed a taller wall, but it was nice of Bernd Leno to pretend he was going to reach it. I thought it was quite, you know, nice to sort of do the jump to the far right, but you can't save those. It's an amazing goal. It's an amazing goal. And it's quite a really annoying, cheeky celebration from Trent as well. But anyway.
I don't know why he did it. Have we said things about him?
No. I did read something ages ago about there being an A celebration like he did for some group chat. I think it was an England thing rather than a personal thing or a Liverpool thing, although it wouldn't surprise me if it was something completely different. But I think it was a few England players that were involved in that, but I may be completely wrong.
Oh, well. I have, yeah, this is probably going to be the longest I worry about Liverpool at all for the rest of the year until we play them again next time. Let's crack on, because we have a debutant Fulham goal scorer. And as the half went on, you know, I think we were definitely getting more into the game. My new favorite thing is looking at these momentum graphs. And really, from about 25 minutes, it's even Stevens with us shading it, especially towards the end. And that came good with a good break, the ball bouncing around the box a bit, and popping out to Timothy Castagne, who had an absolutely lovely finish, better than anything I managed on the seven-side pitch last night. That was for damn sure. And everybody looked absolutely delighted for him, which was good. And I guess the question is, does this further reinforce his starting position over Kenny Tete?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, no, it was a well-worked move. I think in the build-up, I think Muniz went down in the box and everyone was screaming for a penalty. But it was one of those where I think looking back, it probably wasn't a penalty. You're just sort of in the moment. You're heavily biased, of course, towards Fulham. And then, yeah, they carried on playing and Castagne, after a bit of penalty box pinball, has stuck it in the back of the net, which was, sent the Hammersmith end and most of the rest of the ground into delirium. And yeah, I think probably on the balance of the first half, we deserved going in even. And obviously then, you know, because we when we played Arsenal at the Cottage, we went one down, came back to win 2-1. So I felt like we could do something similar, but we'd have to be probably pretty much near on perfect from the moment that free kick went in. And I think, you know, up to half time, like I said, we did a good job of that and we got our just reward. Yeah, it's just a shame what was to come. But yeah, a proud moment for Timmy Chestnut, as they say.
J-Mac, how did you feel about that moment going into halftime? Were you on a high or were you thinking, uh-oh,
yeah,
it's not going to get better than this?
I mean, I was really pleased that Timmy obviously got the goal. But the kind of thing is, it's before that. It was even more well-deserved because I felt like we should have had a corner. It was Alisson actually got his gloves to the ball at one point just before that. So it felt like justice was done. But yeah, I felt like we always have a good tight game against Liverpool. And I felt like 1-1, we were worthy of that. And I felt like we could have actually done a lot more damage in the second half. But the sort of flaws that we were seeing in the first half, particularly from Iwobi and Tosin, just became worse and worse, I thought, in the second half. And just we just lost the game and we lost the sort of the ambition for it.
Yes, and I think we do have to talk about poor old Alex Iwobi, because as the game went on, I was looking at some of his stats and they're not terrible, but the sloppy passes were getting punished every single time. And you know, we can come to the second goal in a minute, which was a lunatic pass. As a old coach mate of mine said, it was a million dollar pass attempt by a £5 player. It was not ideal. The second half, we sort of came out and there wasn't any sort of lift. You sort of hope going in just before halftime that sort of buoys everybody up. But it sort of did the opposite and gave Liverpool the momentum to kick on, I thought. And if I'm sounding a bit flat, dear listener, it's because I'm just thinking about it. It's making me depressed again. Dylan, what was it like at the Cottage?
Yeah, no, much the same, really. There was not too much to cheer about. It was sort of, we came out for the second half. Iwobi obviously misplaced that pass and ended up at the feet of Graven Birch. And I think that was his first Premier League goal as well. So Castagne, Gravenberch, I mean, first Premier League, first for their team. Same ballpark, really. But yeah, it was just, you know, to get results against the top teams, you've got to play a pretty much flawless 90 minutes. And yeah, the second 45 was strewn with errors. And I think the crowd was getting more and more, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say agitated as the game wore on. And then Jota scored that third. I think he was the third sub that came on, actually, not Harvey Elliott, my bad. Yeah, and that was the point where I think a lot of us just sort of mentally gave up and started cheering on Coventry instead.
Yes. Okay, well, let's... I just want to throw this one at you, J-Mac, and I haven't prepped you for this. From my looking at those two VAR decisions, the Coventry one and then the Jota one, they looked exactly the same.
Well, like with all VAR decisions, it just simply comes to down to check the club badge, mate, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
That's essentially it. I hear now Jota's actually injured for a further 2 weeks. He's injured himself for in the game he just played with us. So that's something at least. I didn't like his sort of shrug when he scored the goal, as if like, you know, oh, what have I done there? It's like, you know what you've done, you bastard. But anyway, it's frustrating. But to be honest, I'm not surprised. They're called Liverpool for a reason. I wanted to sort of just talk about just what we... It's really funny how much we miss Willian in this game. I wanted to just say that when we saw the lineup, we saw that Bobby was going to be playing on the left. Well, that's what we assumed anyway. And I had this conversation with Luke before the game. And I always think that it's odd that Bobby doesn't start on the left more because he's right-footed. But usually he starts on the right for us. And I just... It was... Sarge then just said that how Bobby is not actually technically... He's technically very good, but not as skillful as Willian. Because obviously Marcus Silva likes to play with almost like number 10 creative midfielders as wingers. And in this case, he just really saw that Bobby just isn't... He was always like a number 10 at Bristol and for us, but it was more like a second striker. That's why he's such a good finisher. He doesn't really have that sort of creative, skillful outlet and doesn't really have the pace either. So he doesn't able to sort of match what Willian does. And that connection with Robinson just wasn't there. And that was a huge, huge problem for us. And I just thought that Bobby was... There were a few times where Iwobi got really, really frustrated with him on the break, where just Bobby would just fluff it. So yeah, essentially, we miss Willian. But I will say we also miss some really good wingers. Like, you could tell from the substitutions, we are just some really first-class wingers away from being even better than we can already be against these top sides.
So are we over-reliant on Willian? I'm going to say yes, Dylan.
Yeah, I think a little bit considering his age. You know, it's fairly obvious, I think, that he might not be here past this season, or if we're very lucky, we'll get another season. But even then, there's no chance that in a year's time, say, he's going to be able to be as effective or as influential for us as he is now. So I do think we do need to be looking at, you know, alternative options, obviously managing his game time. And yeah, just seeing, I think we do need a couple of top class wingers in the summer, and younger wingers, you know, that will offer us some sort of variety on the wings, and get us playing in a couple of different ways, allow us to mix up against different teams, give us a couple of different options. But yeah, I do think it does feel like for someone who's 36, 37, may even be older. Yeah, we are a little bit too reliant on him.
Sitting here as the elder statesman.
He's a good player, very good player, of course, but I don't think he can't be the answer to all of our problems, no way.
Yeah. Sitting here as the elder statesman of the group, complaining that somebody's 36. I dream to be 36 again, but never mind. We won't get into that. I think that's an interesting question. Do we re-sign, but then also look to retool as well around him to be less reliant? It's going to be an interesting summer, because I think that the wings are definitely somewhere that we need to keep an eye on. Let's start wrapping this up, because I don't like talking about Liverpool, even when we beat them. So, yeah, what are we going to do? Tosin, another player whose contract's up in the summer, back and forth. Not good. I thought his best defensive contribution of the day was his work for Liverpool blocking Muniz's overhead kick, which was probably going to get saved, but it just means I can be a bit bitchy. So, J-Mac, what did you think of him? He again, another player whose recent form has been a bit sketchy.
Yeah, Billy Big Bollocks isn't looking so big now, is he? You know, just the sort of guy who just his silence has been deafening in terms of, like, I'm sure maybe he's just really happily going to sign a contract and be Fulham for the rest of his life. But I mean, there's just been so much sort of gossip that he wants to leave and he's ambitious, wants to play for England, wants to play for the Champions League, blah, blah, blah. But he just honestly was really, really bad this game. And we can allow that because he's actually been very good of late. But, well, maybe the last two games he hasn't been. But, you know, he just every sort of... I mean, he even blocked Rodrigo Muniz's bicycle kick. That just shows you how bad the day was. That's just... And that was that looked like it was going in as well. It just would have been a really nice consolation 3-2, that. But, yeah, Tosin for me is completely, I'm afraid, replaceable. The only reason we only want to keep Tosin, I think a lot of reason the fans really want to keep Tosin is because they know how much more money we should be making for a homegrown English player who is fairly decent at centre-back. I don't think he actually, I mean, is much better than Diop, if I'm being completely honest. I know some people will scream at me for saying that. I'd actually like to see Diop and Bassey together at some point, but I don't know. Maybe he'll sign the thing and everything will be okay. But for me, I think everyone wants Tosin to stay just because we bought him for so cheap and we should be selling him for about 20, 25 million. But actually, he is completely replaceable in my eye.
Yeah. Oh, I think, yeah, much the same. He's good, but I don't think he's not irreplaceable. That's for sure. You know, I think we'd be able to pick somebody up of a similar ability, perhaps even a similar age, for maybe, I don't know, £5-10 million. Cause I do think Diop is a good defender. I know he's got a mistake in him, but I think he was so good. He has been so good when he's played. I think Diop and Bassey is definitely worth a go.
Maybe Tosin is actually keeps on playing because he is actually going to sign. Maybe that's Silva's trick for getting him, you know, to keep on playing.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, I think I've tried it on Football Manager, you know, give a player a few games and hope he signs a new deal. But no, I mean, I'd like him to stay. I'm not going to complain if he does stay, but I wouldn't be awfully put off if he left either.
Yeah.
I understand there's probably an attraction for him to go and want to play for a team like, I don't know, Milan or something like that, or maybe even a Spurs or, you know, I don't know, countless teams he seems to have been linked with. There seems to be a new one every week.
It's interesting because I feel like...
It's one of those. It's one of those. I'll accept the decision, whatever it is.
I think that Tosin... I think I'm able to talk like this about Tosin purely also because of how good Calvin Bassey has been, and in this game as well. I mean, I know obviously we lost, and I know it's just one season, things can change, but Calvin Bassey, for me, is actually arguably our signing of the season. I think he is so, so good. I feel so confident when he is playing, when he is intercepting, when he is covering Robinson, when he inevitably makes a mistake. It's like having a second Polina, but actually in the centre-back role. He is just an absolute beast, and he's one actually we should be looking to keep hold of. He's more likely a sign Liverpool would make more than Robinson, in my opinion. He's going to be really, really important to keep hold of this summer because he is, I think, one of the most enforcing centre-backs we've had for a very long time and just so good with his feet and just left-footed to boot. So there you go.
When we signed him, my brother-in-law, who's a hardcore Rangers fan up in Glasgow, was just like, you've got a player there. He said, forget what happened at Ajax. He says, you've got a player. And he's been superb. Now for our new segment, which is producer Don's yellow card watch. João Palhinha is up to 13 and getting ever closer to the magic 15, where he gets suspended once again. I thought it was another sort of quiet game from Palhinha. He was throwing himself about a bit as normal, but we've got Palace up next before we head off to somewhere else. And as I've just closed the tab, we've got another one. But are we worried that 15 is going to happen, just given the way he plays and the way referees happily dish out a yellow card to him after about 60 minutes?
I mean,
whatever.
What, 13 yellow cards, 4 games to go. Wouldn't rule it out, but then I could also see him maybe being rested for a game in between there and now, given that our season's effectively over. I mean, the only one I sort of attach any real importance to now is probably Brentford, just because I'd love to win there. But apart from that, you know, Palace, or the Bone Family Derby, as you say, Brentford, City, and Luton. Yeah, I don't know. He's capable of picking up cards. You know, we've seen that. And I wonder, you know, if he does get suspended, hopefully it's going to be in the last game of the season. So if he does sign for another Premier League team, they can't use him till September. But I know, let's see.
It's interesting. You know, I think I just having moved to England when I was 11, 12 in 1990, and all the Liverpool fans at school who were unbearable just made me despise that team. But in our group chat, the voice of reason was Sarge just saying, you know, we weren't great, we weren't at our best, and it was Liverpool. So, you know, it's a fair comment. So I will give Sarge a nod for being
he always is
for being the reasonable
adult. He always is.
And just to say, I mean, I've remembered now who their substitution was. It was like, so we obviously had Kenny and Wilson coming on, and they bring on Darwin Nunez, McAllister, and
oh yeah, that was it.
And the other one, I've
got it wrong twice. Brilliant.
It was McAllister they brought on the third one. It's just our substitutions. I don't really understand what we can. Just Marcus Silva. That is one of recurring theme of the season. They are always a bit too late. Now I get that he had to bring on Kenny and Wilson in the 71st minute. Then they score the third in the 72nd. So obviously you're going to tinker around, hopefully see what can happen there. But then you bring on Adama Traore in the 84th or 85th minute. Far too late to score two goals. I would have brought him on way sooner, but I don't know. I'm not the manager, but I just feel like sometimes we're really suffering from a bit of, you know, just trying to actually get an equaliser or score two goals in like 12 or 13 minutes.
That's something, I know Dylan and I were chatting about this before we got on it. Nearly 20 minutes after that second goal goes in, and that's when the subs are made. And it was quite a sort of reasonably flat period after that. Yes, Liverpool had most of the possession, but yeah, you would think that would be the opportunity to start changing them up. It seems to be he's got a time when he likes to try to introduce and influence the game. And after three seasons of this now, I don't think that's going to change too much. Let's mention it. I said in the introduction, the old Twitter sphere was alive with away fans and home ends again. What was it like when they were scoring?
I'm back at the Hammersmith end, not the standing uppy part, more just to the side. But yeah, there was a few in there.
Well, the sensible
part. Yeah, the sensible part. Yeah, the refined area of the Fulham fan base, should we say? I mean that sounds awful, but
yeah, you should come down with me and Kish.
That'd be great. But yeah, no, there was a couple. I did see an interesting point. I think it was Tristan who made it. Do you think the club would make the away end bigger, or that the reason they're not making the away end bigger is because then they'll have to charge £30 for more tickets in the ground? I don't know if that's another factor that's come into their thinking. But then again, they make the away ends bigger, it's not going to stop the issues of tourists getting into the home end and, you know, supporting whoever they want. Yeah, it's just frustrating because I feel like it. I know it happens to all Premier League clubs, and it's probably especially London clubs. I don't know too many, you know, numbers or figures on this sort of thing, but yeah, it's just a bit frustrating. Like, you go and you want to be part of not an intimidating atmosphere, but you want to feel like you're in amongst just Fulham fans, and like that white wall at Wembley was great. And I know not every game is going to be like that, but just feels like when you're getting away fans in the home areas, it just kills the atmosphere a bit. And not many games this season have been like incredible atmosphere wise. Whereas in the Championship, we had a few that were really, really good. You know, more towards the end of the seasons and like the playoffs and that. But yeah, I don't know. Just feel like for big games, it's just, I don't know. It's not the same as it has been in the past. That's all I can really say.
Jeremy, do you think it's because we're too nice and the club's pretty confident nothing's going to
happen? I think that's always been it. And I think I don't see it ever changing. I don't see the attitude changing. I think it's just something everyone will absolutely moan about and F and blind and C word it on Twitter. Or, sorry, X. But like, it just, I don't think it'll actually ever change. I think it's just gonna keep on being like this. This is not normal. This is not new for like clubs like us, mid-table ones, especially in London. I don't like comparing us to Brentford, but you saw how many Man United fans literally cheered and applauded when they scored at the Bees place. I mean, it was just, it's gross. But unfortunately, I don't really know how else really it can be solved. I will share a really funny story that Wigo shared. It was obviously in Johnny Haynes. And there was a guy with a Liverpool shirt, just completely arrogant and confident enough just to wear his Liverpool shirt in the Johnny Haynes set after the game. And then Wigo just basically said, you need to you know, cover that up, mate. And the guy responds to him and just looks at Wigo and just says, fuck off. and Wigo then decides to shove him down the stairs a little bit on the way out. I think the guy's all right, but I just found that quite funny. But yeah, it's just can't do anything about it, really. Yeah, we can protest, we can raise more yellow cards, but it's just... We're London. It's a tourist trap. The cons. It's always going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, I do think we've done well to get as many proper fans as we do have in the era of sort of Arsenal and Chelsea and Spurs all being in that same sort of catchment area. So I do think we've done well. Yeah, it is a thing that's probably always going to, you know, we're always going to be talking about, aren't we? But yeah, no, it's what it is. But yeah, I'd like it to be. Like it to be a bit more partisan in the ground, but it is what it is.
Right, well, let's move on. And as Sam, our new hosty sort of chap, is trying to bring a bit of professionalism to this, we're now going to take a quick break. Because apparently he's put that in. So
it does actually sound better.
Over to producers on. Yeah, I know. There you go. It's been 27 minutes, so let's take a break.
Fulham.
There we go. Everybody enjoy the break.
That was great. Ready to go. Second half.
Bring it on. Thank you for trying to get J-Mac and I to raise our standards, Sam. We kind of appreciate it. Let's talk FA Cup replays. Now, that's probably the one that's come out of the blue that nobody was expecting. Well, to be fair, there was probably the three people in the cupboard handing over the £33 million check to the FA that probably knew it was coming. Everybody else not. How do we feel about it? I think it's a shame. I was surprised and disappointed, but kind of not at the same time, given the way everything's been going recently. It's one of those things you're like, I'm really cross about this, but I don't think I can get too exercised about it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. And you just see, you know, the fact that they actually only ask Premier League clubs, which is an absolute scandal in itself. You know, it's all hypocrisy from these managers. You saw Pep talking about how much little time they have and how little breaks they have with Alan Shearer and Gary Lineker at the end of the coverage on BBC for their FA Cup game. And you just think, all the tour games you do to Asia, to Japan, to America, all these things, and you still think you can't play and replay if you draw a game. You've literally got, you know, the squads they have, the money they have, the depth. You should just be winning the match and then you don't have to do the replay. So it is stupid. But I can understand in one sense as well that actually not having replays means there could potentially be more banana slips. You could actually have a nice lower league team winning a game and then not having to replay and the other team gets the bigger team gets their act together. So that there is that potentially. But it's non-surprising, but it's very disappointing.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a bit of a shame, really. I mean, you know, as you said, I think there was 782 teams at sort of at the start of the preliminary round of the FA Cup, may even have been more in sort of the extra ones. But the fact they only consulted 20 before making the decision is a bit balmy. And, you know, if anything, they've asked the 20 clubs with the least to gain financially from the FA Cup. I mean, you know, obviously the prize money on offer is fairly generous, but it would mean a lot more to, I don't know, a club at National League level or League Two, League One, Championship than it would to one of the Premier League clubs. And I think it is quite, I don't know, I don't want to say it's an entitled point of view, but when you see top six fans saying, oh, good, I'm glad they're gone. But yeah, they, you know, those sorts of games are once in a lifetime for like, you know, clubs at National League, League Two level, and as you think, we get Manchester United, Liverpool every season now potentially. They don't, and then the point about managers complaining about the replays and the games, it's all a bit fickle, really. I mean, I think it's Spurs are playing in Australia something like 48 hours after this season finishes. Ridiculous. And then you also look at this week, Man City played in the FA Cup on Saturday, having played in the Champions League on Wednesday. I think Bernardo Silva played 120 minutes on Wednesday and 90 minutes on Saturday. And then you've got players like, perfectly capable players like Mateus Nunez, I think the example I saw, didn't play a single minute in either game.
Yeah, they spent like 60 million quid.
And yet here they are, complaining that, there's not enough time between the games. Just use the squad correctly, and I'm sure there won't be too much of an issue. I understand, tiredness and stuff like that, but if you're just going to name the same 11, you're going to struggle for sympathy from the rest of the footballing world. Really,
it's absolutely Thomas Frank's fault for being such an arsehole in that press conference, saying it's a disgrace that they have to do a replay. Let's just blame him. It feels better.
Stick it on that little road.
Yeah, I don't know. Just scrap the Carabao Cup. No one gives a shit about that anyway. It's the Mickey Mouse Cup. But then again, we'd love it if we won it. Maybe make Carabao Cup only for players, only for teams that aren't playing in Europe. That season. I don't know. But just keep the replays. It's absolutely fine. It doesn't do anything bad. It's just football is just becoming a really gross thing at the moment.
So it's just more and more commercialized every week.
People are talking more about like deduction points and finances than ever before. Owners and, wanting Saudi Arabia in or Qatar in instead of other people. It's getting really rank. And now the FA Cup's being compromised even more. I think it's just really sad.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I just feel more like a pound sign every week rather than like a genuine fan of the football club anymore. Just feels a bit more like, they only want you for your money. And as soon as you're not willing to pay anymore, they'll sell your seat at double the price you were paying, and somebody else will go and sit in it, and they don't care.
Well, don't tempt fate about that double the price bit.
Oh, God. Sorry, everyone. You can blame me.
When's that announced, that address? That's soon, right?
Probably soon.
I think it's late because normally, it's around about time of my wedding anniversary that the renewal comes up.
I've been able to renew in March before. I know when we went up in 2018, I renewed in the April of 2018 or March, whenever. And I was 17 at the time, but I paid £60 for a season ticket. Then we got promoted and they didn't make me pay anything extra. And now it's over 600, I think.
Yes, it's bonkers. You're getting old, mate.
Yeah. And you stop growing up.
Yeah, it should be any time. It'll be interesting to see what they do, and I think that's a discussion for when that comes out, and we can, I don't know, maybe get Simon back and have a chat to him about that, because it's now time to discuss the Boney Family Derby, the other match after Chelsea that I just always hope we win, which is Palace. And having gotten rid of Roy and having Oliver Glasner come in, they've been doing quite well, and they turned over West Ham, which is always fun to see at the weekend. So under Glasner, they've played 8 games, won 3, drawn 2, lost 3. So it's reasonable, but decent bounce. They're in 14th. We're in 12th. They've got Newcastle on Wednesday, so fixture congestion, boys. Not a lot of recovery time, all that jazz. The interesting talking point was it was announced at lunchtime that Stuart Atwell is going to be the referee. So the Luton fan is now in charge of this mighty, mighty London derby. J-Mac, how do you feel? I suppose we could just ask. If Fulham put out a tweet going, the VAR is a Chelsea fan, he's not going to give us anything, what would your response that be?
Stop taking control of the admin Twitter account, Tony Khan, and stop doing cocaine while you're doing it. That's the stinks of Tony Khan, just absolutely having a massive line and just taking over the comms of the fucking Twitter. It's pathetic. I mean, everyone's actually already made that comparison before, as saying it sounds like the owner's taken his phone and just decided to tweet that. It's really bad. I mean, I'd be really embarrassed, to be honest. But the other counteract is some people are saying, actually, good. This needs to be the decision making has been terrible. I mean, it was actually three penalties that they should have had. So, I mean, it just smacks of being really, really childish as well. So, I don't know. But when it comes to Palace, I think we're in a kind of, they should be on the beach as well as us. And they're not, because they're really enjoying their new kind of, the new flavor of Glasner at the moment. You can tell they're enjoying themselves. And this new formation that they've got going with three at the back, like 3-4-3, and you've got sort of Eze and Olise playing as almost two attacking midfielders behind Mateta. They're just having the best time of their lives at the moment with freedom and creativity. It reminds me a bit of, not the same sort of formation, but just when we had Iwobi, Kearney and Pereira just on fire, just you didn't know which number 10 was going to be scoring or like creating something next. I feel like they're really in that sort of having a lot of fun phase. And I don't really know how we're going to do against it, because it could be a draw, but they feel like they're really flying at the moment. And I feel like we are very stale. One thing I will say about the Liverpool game is that everything just feels a bit stale. I'm not saying Marco's bored, but I'm just saying just the substitutions, the way we play, just everything feels a little bit. And I know obviously West Ham was great. I don't want to seem ungrateful for what happened there, but just we feel a bit stale. They feel like they've just got a new chef in. Do you know what I mean? It just feels like it could be a bit slippery.
Yes. Can they catch us? Yeah, if they beat Newcastle and then beat us, they'll be on equal points. So yeah, we have to win. Otherwise, I might actually hear from my brother, and it will not be about him asking for money, which will be, I'd rather give him money than have Palace win. But that's something different. Dylan, how are you feeling going in? Because I've been liking the way Palace have been playing. There's, you know, we know what Roy's like. Everybody does exactly what they're supposed to do and nothing more. They've been released. All that creativity seems to be clicking. Yeah, they beat Liverpool. And now 5 goals, granted 5-2, still shipped a couple. They're coming in a little bit of form. Yeah, they still put 2 past Man City a few weeks back as well. So they're scoring. We're stuttering, stale. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think the fact we're at home and that they play tomorrow, Wednesday, pretty plays into our hands a little bit. I'd fancy us to win. I think, you know, we're sort of due a good result at home, I feel, after the last two, three games, perhaps at home. No, two games, just the Newcastle and Brighton ones. Newcastle and Liverpool. But yeah, no, I fancy us. I think, you know, Eze and Olise, obviously two fantastic players. I think it would be, lockdown season, cult hero, Joachim Andersen captaining them. Should Gehi still be out, and can't remember who else. Joel Ward, I think, is their club captain. And I think Andersen has captained in the past couple of games. But no, I don't see why we can't do a job on them. You know, we've beaten some fantastic teams at the Cottage this season, and I think, you know, I think we should be adding their name to the list come 5 p.m. on Saturday with everything being well.
It's been a good season for players linked with Fulham or who have played for Fulham against us. You know, Olaina, Lamina, Klein, Hudson-Odoi, you know, he wasn't obviously with us, but we were linked with. Like, you can bet your bottom dollar Joachim Andersen will have some absolute stormer or score a header at one point. But making the point on Andersen quickly, just going back to my Tosin point I made earlier, if someone said Tosin leaves but Andersen comes in, I'd be fine. Do you know what I mean? So that's why. That's not, that just emphasizes my point how I think Tosin is replaceable. I would rather have Joachim Andersen there than Tosin. Love that man.
Okay, let's talk hypotheticals. Cup of tea, I should be able to say hypotheticals. Do we ring any changes here? You know, do we see Diop? Do we see someone else come in for Iwobi? You know, do you throw Adama Traore on at them and just see what the headless chicken can do? I don't know. So as the host, I'm throwing this over to you guys to put me right. What do you
think, Jamie? Probably just hope that Willian is fit and then just go back to Willian on the left and Iwobi on the right. Obviously, Muniz stays where he is. I thought Muniz, just by the way, against Liverpool, was feeding off scraps and brilliant at holding everything up once more. Just really Mitrovic-like in terms of how he was holding everything. I just think yeah, I would keep it as it is. Lukic had a good game, so I wouldn't drop him. He would stay with Pelinha. And even though Tosin has had a mare, I don't know. I just don't see Silva changing it, even though I personally would. I'd like to see D up there. I think we'll probably just be the same, but potentially with Willian and on the left end, Iwobi on the right.
Yeah, no, I think probably something pretty similar. I do like the idea of Adama starting, but I think he might be more effective, you know, coming off the bench with all that sort of raw pace and power. Yeah. Up against, you know, legs have got 70, 75 minutes in them, a little bit tired. But yeah, no, I think Willian, Iwobi, Pereira, and then, I don't know, I'd like to see Kearney play. So maybe I'll switch up a little bit. I'll go Kearney in for Lukic. And then, yeah, with Pelinha, hope he doesn't get booked.
Yeah, that's probably not a terrible shout. I didn't think Lukic was terrible on Saturday. He was trying to sort of stem the flood that was coming at him. I'm just going to say it again, I'm really, really pleased to see him playing as well as he is. He's been superb over the last few games. Yes, everybody was a bit quiet on Sunday, but it's a really, really useful option. And I think with Palace probably going to be playing quite high tempo sort of stuff, that does play into the sort of plan B we do have, which is sort of sit back and use the counter. There's opportunity there. And I definitely think there's still Palace have a soft underbelly. So once we get in there, get some balls into Muniz, there's going to be some.
Well, hopefully Leno has a good game, because Leno, I think, has just been a bit sort of inconsistent of late. And, with the way, like I said, Elise and Eze are playing, there's going to be a lot of overloading and a lot of shots, I think. So we need Leno just to have a bit slightly better game, the way he saved that third goal that went in on Sunday.
It's the final game of our little mini series with West Ham, Crystal Palace and Liverpool, because I think all four teams have played the other three in that sort of run of three games that we've just had. Don't know why I noticed that when I was looking at the fixtures, but there you go.
We've done quite well for London derbies as well this season, so there's every optimistic belief that we could actually win against Palace. But I mean, yeah, it's been a good season for London derbies, so let's hopefully we'll get the 3 points.
Yeah, as long as it's not another dull 0-0, that'd be fine with me.
We've got to win. You guys have had the pleasure of not meeting my brother. You do, you'll realise why. Plus he's better at playing the game than me. I think we've sort of flogged Palace to death, and hopefully we'll do that on Saturday as well, because we have to. Looking ahead, we're going to look back, because to start wrapping this thing up, good things have been happening. Always like to look at the other Fulham teams and how they're doing. Fulham under 21s beat Chelsea in the Premier League Cup, so we are in the final, playing either Spurs or Forest. You don't play for a couple of weeks, so there's no actual date I could find anywhere for the final for that. So that could be a laugh for Fulham focused team outing. Go watch a Fulham team in a cup final. They've got their final game of the season against Spurs on Friday night, and they're safe in third in Premier League too. So they've been doing really, really well, and there's a lot of hopeful talent coming through. We chatted about Jay Stansfield last week, but there's some potential in our youth ranks, especially with the under-18s as well. They're currently fourth in the under-18s Premier League. So who knows? Maybe if Marco decides to go with someone under the age of 28, we might have some of these lads coming through. Anyone taking your fancy, boys? That sounds terrible, but you know what I mean.
I like the look of Godo at Wigan, Marshall Godo. He played at Crawley a couple of seasons ago. He looks really, really good. But I think it might be a case similar to Stansfield, maybe a championship loan next year. Maybe also the same with Luke Harris. I think he might benefit from the sounds of it by maybe another season at League One level, or maybe championship. And then, I think Stansfield, though, has to be in the team for next season. He looks so good. Do you, hear the Fulham Fix podcast with Gordon Davies. I saw a clip and he said he thought if he stayed at Fulham for the rest of his career, Stansfield could be the one to break his record, which would be a nice story.
That'd be cool.
I think.
Do you think we'll see him?
Yeah, I do. I'm interested by the development of. I'm going to murder this name, but Pajacity or Pajacita.
Pajacity. Yeah.
He's someone that interests me because that is a player that Marcus Silva brought on in the championship season a couple of times. And he just seems like he's getting better and better. And I think he looks like one that could be really interesting. And like obviously, Josh King is like someone that I think looks very exciting as well, according to Dave Wilson from Fulham Focus. And also, you've got Lane McCoy Splatt. So yeah, hopefully he'll come through so we can make a good chat about him. But yeah, it's the future's bright. I mean, I can't actually. Can someone please tell me if we've actually won this cup before? I feel like we always reach the final and lose against Chelsea or something. And we've beaten Chelsea. Like, have we?
Last year we lost in semi-finals.
And we lost against Chelsea maybe about two seasons ago as well.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, David Beckham was at that game last year. I think because his son plays at Brentford, but maybe he was just there to watch the Fulham as the chant goes.
I tell you what, it's funny that Jose Mourinho was at the cottage watching us, wasn't it?
That was weird.
Yeah.
And what's the other guy?
But it was good to see Vincenzo Montella.
He loves coming to this.
Happy days for that.
His son was a Fulham Academy player.
Mm, yeah, I remember that. Last year, we got knocked out by Brentford in the semi-final, who went on to win it. The Under-21s Cup, that is. And the year before that, great radio this, me looking. We got beat by West Brom in the semi-final.
Yeah, I don't know if we've actually done the business of this year. I always feel like we're close. And also, sorry, did you just say Brentford won it last year? They actually won the whole cup. That's really annoying, isn't it? Because they didn't have an academy until recently. They just decided to get one, and now they just won it.
They just signed sons of ex-footballers. Beckham, Paul Dickov, all of them.
Get to the funny and my boy Fig Rolls doing the business. That's what we want. Who else have we got here? Under 18s, 3-3 against Chelsea away at Reading on Saturday. Then fourth, we said that as well. And the ladies have their penultimate match of the season away at Enfield Town on Sunday. They're safe in third, which means they will not be getting promoted out of the London and Southeast Regional Women's League this year. But they've come on really, really strong, especially second half of the season. So all the best to them. Gentlemen, as always, this has been a pleasure. J-Mac Jr., thank you for behaving yourself there.
Yeah, sounds like Bigfoot having an asthma attack at the moment. He's just snoring on me. He's just like, he's been all right.
Well, that's the effect Fulham Focus has on our listeners. Everybody to sleep.
I think my dad's done the same a few times.
Right. Gents, as always, utter pleasure, as I said. Let's wrap this thing up. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on Fulham Focus. Be sure to check us out on all the socials. If you could be so kind as to put a review into your podcast app of choice and stars, that helps our AI overlords share this podcast wide and far. And who knows, there might be Fulham people out there looking for a new podcast, as it seems the Fulham podcast family is shrinking come the end of the season. So please pass on the good word. Let us know anything you want us to chat about via socials. Just drop us a line. And check in on your mates. Make sure everybody's okay. Take care of yourselves. And until next time, I've been Boney. And this has been the Fulham Focus Podcast. Fulham.